Welcome to the Geek Whisperers, where we bring social media to enterprise, sometimes IT. I'm Amy Lewis.
And I'm John Troyer.
And we're here this week. We're one geek down, so to speak, because one of our tribe, Matt, is off having a lot of fun. So I hope he's having a great vacation. But good news, John, we've got somebody on for you to fight with.
Boy, so, that, talk about setting us up for something here. I don't know.
Well, normally it's me and Matt, so somebody has to take sides here.
Well, we'll see where it leads us. What's our topic today?
Well, today we're going to be talking about a couple things. We're going to be talking about Google Plus. It's a much maligned platform, and we happen to have a fantastic expert who makes an incredibly strong case for it. So without further ado, Mark, you want to introduce yourself?
Well, this is a lot of weight to carry, carrying the whole weight of the entire Google Plus project for Google. But I am Mark Trapagan. I am Director of Digital Outreach with Verante Incorporated, a search engine marketing agency in Morrisville, North Carolina, just outside of Raleigh. Met Amy through a mutual colleague and have been following her on Twitter and having wonderful adventures with her, not only in marketing, in IT and tech, but also in wonderful lunch event discoveries that Amy will lead you to.
It's true. I it is an expertise of mine, lunch.
Did you get into this, Amy? Did you get into this industry for the lunches?
Well, I like to say I'm a SME in bacon.
Is that on your LinkedIn endorsements yet?
Yes, bacon. You can endorse me for bacon as well as flying over handlebars.
Oh man, that's worth talking about. If everyone didn't universally agree that was just some sort of weird, possibly brilliant, but bizarre and ultimately horrible scam by LinkedIn.
Yeah. No, and dive in, and I'm going to make sure our viewers paid special attention to what Mark said his title was, because that'll come up again later in the podcast. Because the other thing we're going to talk about is the state of the social media industry, and all that was capital letters, if you couldn't hear that in my voice.
Yes, my name is Mark Trapagan, and I was a social media manager. Hello, Mark.
Hi, Mark. Well, let's jump into this Google Plus thing here. So, Mark, just so you know where I stand, we certainly use Google Plus at my work, and we have Google Plus channels or pages or whatever you call them. We have several. We're trying to not have too many, like we have too many Facebook pages. We have a couple of communities. We also have people who are in our community who've set up communities, and I'm often members of those. And I've circled by several, I don't know, 1,000 people, and I've circled several thousand people, and that's all good, but you know what we end up doing? We end up putting on Google Plus the same things that we put on Facebook, and we put something out there every day, little rabbit pellets. But Google Plus isn't really doing it for me in terms of personal engagement. I don't find it very interesting or engaging. I seem to be mostly on Twitter these days. Mm-hmm. So that's where we are, and we found that our, in terms of community, although there is VMware community over on Google Plus, most of our, I'll get into our kind of our history later, but so that's where I'm sitting. I'm sitting with the rest of the industry, kind of wondering where's the there.
Yeah, that is the question. It's a great question, and I'm so glad to be engaging with somebody who's having that experience, because it's the experience that I hear from prospects and clients that come in weekly, on a weekly basis. And our business development team will talk to us, oh, you need to talk to Mark Trapping, and you need to talk about Google Plus and the wonderful thing he's doing. And they can't believe they want somebody to talk to them about Google Plus, especially if they've tried it and they feel like there's not that much happening for us, or it's the same things that are happening elsewhere. So why do we need another social network in which to engage? And I'll cut right to the chase for me just quickly to tell a little bit of my kind of Google Plus story. I've been intrigued with social media since it was a word, and wanting to really explore the possibilities of, you know, what it meant to build a network and the caliber that we might build in a small town or small city and back in the day and still do today through the venture of social media. But I kind of got on late on Facebook and a little bit too late on Twitter, you know, had some good success there, but not enough to really catch hold. And Google Plus came along, and I got an invite on the third day. Now, I should say that I had been watching this for about a year before it came out in June of 2011, because there were rumors out there that Google was cooking up something very different. And the rumors of something called Google Me, Google Circles, those were the names that were leaking out. And we knew that there was some kind of internal network that Google had been using for over a year. They've been testing. But the thing that intrigued me most, and I should say that I am kind of the social media guy, for lack of a better term, in an SEO agency, an agency that's centered around search engine optimization for companies and brands. And so when I saw Google Plus, and even before I saw it, the stuff that was leaking out from Google was that what was going to be different about this from some of Google's other experiments in social media before, like Buzz or Coot, things like this, this wasn't going to be a side product bolted on the side, but it was going to be integrated into all things Google. And that got my antenna up. When Google's the biggest search engine, we still think that search is, you know, maybe only below email networking, email marketing, excuse me, in terms of the amount of influence and power that you can draw, targeting, reaching an audience at what some people call the moment of intent when they're ready to buy. So when Google opens up a door, we always look at it. Got an invite on the third day. I started, this is my opportunity. This is my chance to be on something from the beginning and really kick its tires, take it on the road and see what I can do with it. Long story short, I'm at nearly 34,000 followers now, a year and a half later. But the number doesn't mean as much to me as other things that I've been seeing that we can do with this. And the main thing that we've been interested in exploring from a marketing standpoint, from a business standpoint, is the ability to affect Google search. Now, the last thing I'll say, just to try to not make this answer into the whole podcast, is that a lot, you'll find a lot of people repeating that kind of as a mantra. Well, you need to be on, you can almost hear the pain in these blog posts or comments, and somebody's just like, well, should I be on Google Plus? Well, you need to be there for the SEO.
It's medicinal.
There. Yeah, that's right, exactly. You need to take the castor oil, you know, to keep you from getting consumption, whatever that is, the Little House on the Prairie days. But yeah, Google Plus is kind of the castor oil of search marketing. But we've been exploring some of the power of that. And while everybody's talking about the so-called SEO power of Google Plus, we've been figuring out how it really works, and it really does work. And we can get more into the kind of nuts and bolts of that. But that's where my excitement, my interest is. I have found, for myself personally, tremendous engagement and tremendous interest areas on Google Plus, but they're still in niches. They're in pockets, and it remains to be seen if other niches and pockets can be brought in to that. But I'll stop there for now and let you react to that.
I don't know, Amy, have you done a lot of Google Plus stuff?
I'll be honest. The only reason I started Google Plusing, two reasons. I dipped my toe in a little bit because I was supposed to. It was medicinal. And, you know, we work amongst a community of engineers. And then the second reason was because I had this fantastic lunch with Mark, and perhaps it was the food coma, the bacon. But I thought, I've got to try this because Mark's incredibly bright and articulate, and he's making this convincing argument, and he doesn't seem like he's taking castor oil in this activity. So I've tried it. I still don't feel like I get it. And it still does feel like a joyless Facebook to me.
Well, yeah, it strikes me we've compared the social media channels to a pyramid scheme where you have to get in early. That's one. Mm-hmm. A joyless Facebook. I see the same stupid pictures on Facebook, and I see them on Google Plus. But at least on Facebook, they're people I vaguely know, and not necessarily on Google Plus. I also don't like. Well, okay, boy, I don't know where to go from here, what we don't like or what we do. So, well, Mark, what if I told you that I don't need SEO? How would you as a member of your search engine marketing company respond?
Well, the first thing I'd say is, why do you think you don't need SEO?
I have giant, big, atomic balls of SEO.
must warm up tweeting fingers.
That's right. There are days when I wish I were a graphic artist.
I'm sorry, that was actually a quote taken from the Bikram Yoga guy. So, but except without the SEO part, and I was just reading an article on it. So, I work for VMware. VMware has a lot of SEO juice in of itself. We do have SEO consultants that work on our website, but what we've done is I have hundreds of bloggers who all blog about VMware, point to our articles and point to each other, and I point back to them with a blog aggregator. Also, we have thousands of people on Twitter who are posting our articles. So I'm much more in the camp of content marketing, do good content and the rest will follow. And then let's try to engineer some SEO. Now, this is good. There's a couple of caveats. One is that I am a web guy and I expect a basic amount of SEO from people. So occasionally when I am working with an internal group and they have had an external agency, quote unquote, smart, savvy digital agency, construct them a website or a microsite, it will come back with incompetently built, and it will have every page has the same title, you know, and terrible things like that. And then we just look at each other and pull out our hair and try to patiently explain what they've done wrong. So I do expect some basics of SEO. The other piece that, and maybe Amy, is this true for you? As I counsel people, so I half of my job is consulting internally, social media, and the people I'm counseling are kind of traditional marketers, and they can barely do social media as it is, right? It's very foreign to them. It seems very weird. They feel like they should be marketing harder, and they want a lot of, like, we're trying to work on curriculum and training and, you know, guidebooks and things like that, and they would love, like, a step-by-step guide to exactly what to do.
One quick question, John.
Yeah.
Is one of the things you've told them to do listen to this podcast?
Oh, no. that's true. I sent it around the other week. But
and you call yourself a marketer, John.
I don't. No, I don't I'm like just marketing. Saying,
he's going to be like, there are these hard to deal with people I work with. Oh, hi, team.
Well, and the challenge is if we give them SEO rules to follow, in addition to the guidelines, the social media guidelines that we give them, they will love it because it's more rules, and then they will totally focus on the SEO part and will ignore the good content part. And it's so hard for a marketing person to generate content that's of interest to a technologist in the first place that I hate to give them more rules. So that was my long essay, why I don't need SEO.
Yeah, wow. I think the people that you're talking to, the engineers, you've already got a good gauge on who they are and what – how they react to things. So you know how you want to couch that and train that. I guess I'm going back a moment to what you said. You don't need VMware, you don't need SEO. To some extent, that may be true. I'm not doubting your word. And there are obviously very large brands that have huge presence that people don't have trouble finding and getting connected with. I guess one thought I would have is, can you ever have enough? Can you ever have enough?
No, and that's true. And we have consultants, and we go through keywords, and we go through our pages. So we actually do a lot of basic due diligence on our side as well.
You're doing the basics. What I think Google Plus affords, and I want to back up for a moment and just say quickly that while I won't back away from the fact that I'm obviously somewhat of a Google Plus evangelist. That's why I was willing to give up my bacon at that first lunch and slide it over onto Amy's plate to put her into that coma so I can induce her. But I'm not going to be the one to say everybody needs to be on Google Plus. Everybody needs to be doing it. Everybody needs to be doing SEO the way that I'm doing it or the way that we're doing it for our clients. But there are a ton of people out there who have no bandwidth in the search. And they're competing in areas. I work with a lot of small to medium businesses who are just so blocked out by the major brands that Google, frankly, favors. And I'm not one of those who thinks that Google is in some conspiracy with the major brands. I think Google simply favors major brands in a lot of cases because that's what people think they want. And Google is totally in the business of giving people what they think they want. So any avenue where the smaller guy, the smaller gal can get a leg up and get some bandwidth into search where the old stuff is not working anymore. I think we're all aware of that. it's stupid to say it doesn't work, but it's not worth the risk anymore of some of the old SEO tricks and techniques that the little guys used to use just to try to get a voice to get on. You've got to be using the avenues that are there, and what I'm offering up is that Google Plus, if you understand some of the things that we've come to understand through our experience, our testing, can be a way of getting that bandwidth, can be a way of getting a voice into search that you don't have the opportunities to get anymore because the tricks don't work. Does that make some sense?
Absolutely. I think so. I mean, it's an interesting tool. I was all psyched when it first came out about how often I showed up when I Googled VMware with my personal mm-hmm. search turned on, all the Google Plus juice. It does make sense from that perspective, I suppose. I don't know, Amy, do you guys pay much attention to it? I don't know how much you deal with content ranking and search engine?
Amy, you represent a very small business, so...
Well, the problem is that in our large businesses, right, we're all cut up into silos. So I don't know how much mm-hmm. social media cares about search engine ranking.
No, it's true. I try to be aware of it in terms of the blog platform. We've got that as a thing you can do. So I've been Google Plusing Engineers Unplugged because I feel like that's the correct audience that they'll want to hear about the content, especially as it pertains to chicken and waffles. You'll notice the crossover there. To John's earlier point, I think it is complicated enough to get people to write what you need them to write, to do what they need to do. They sort of have a vague awareness of SEO and terms and hashtags and everything else. In some ways, it all comes from the same bucket. And trying mm-hmm. to get people focused on that way of thinking is complicated enough. And you know, I think people who are social reticent already, Google Plus would break their brains. Just as a side note, that would be the platform that caused them to go over the edge. At the same time, there's plenty of people in the engineering community who feel that Google Plus is perfect because it doesn't have the commercialism, if you will, of Facebook. And those are the platforms I see compared side by side. Nobody lets LinkedIn into the party at all. But yeah. So in terms of SEO, I don't, to be honest, like I've turned over the reins of that side of me. I used to be a web person as well. I used to have to build sites with that in mind and be more keenly aware of it. And we're going at it a different way. My task is a little different. It was fun for me. And so the viewers know, I was actually on a panel last night that Mark was there as well around SEO. And it's really interesting for me to think about content as the new SEO is sort of the conversation. So John, your earlier point about doing good content marketing and letting it sort itself out, having a community amplify it, is kind of the way forward for me as well. But there is still that part of me that's old school and thinking about search terms and where it appears and finding engaging with new people. I mean, that's always the same thing. My fear, if we don't pay some attention to SEO, if we don't pay attention to these different platforms, is leaving some audience unserved and not gathering all the eyes and ears that we can. Mm-hmm. And I consider all of them valuable.
Yeah, I think you make a really great point. I used to have the saying, something like, you know, we want to get the content to you in whatever the place you like to hang out in, you know, and if that's Google Plus, we shouldn't ignore it. And I don't want to be the guy sitting here, you know, hating on Google Plus. That's not me particularly, and that's not a very interesting podcast, Mark. So, Amy and I both are wearing more community hats these days, or at least mm-hmm. what's one of the hats we wear. And so the story of the VMware community is that in 2008, 2009, we started to get them on Twitter, and we had a forum that they were all hanging out in, and then we tried to pull them on Twitter, and we did a lot of evangelism work in those years at VMworld, our conference, and over again, and on our blogs, and I started a podcast, and it was all not explicitly and not even always consciously, but the end result was we drove everybody to Twitter. A lot of these people were not social media people, were not socially active, they're kind of middle-aged engineers, like, why do I need to get on Twitter? They complained. And we got them on Twitter now, and everybody's having fun, and they get it. So, one, I can't just tell them, okay, now come over to Google. Like, I'm so tired of not being able to have a conversation, like not be able to actually have a conversation where I use complete grown-up sentences, you know, which is, you know, yeah. I'm in Twitter, I'm stuck on 140 characters. So there are some reasons I would love to move to Google Plus so I could actually have a conversation about something substantive. But I can't. I can't move my tribe. You know, where I can't sure. can't go through that desert. But Mark, I would love to hear more about your experience in somebody who's really kind of deep into Google Plus. Like, what is the community experience like for you? Like, how does it feel? What do you really notice about it?
Yeah, John, I honestly could not have scripted a better lead softball question for me.
Good, I'm a professional at this.
I think this is so key to understand, and those of us that feel like we're getting great benefit out of Google Plus, and let's step aside totally from the SEO questions at the moment and just talk about Google Plus as a place to be. It's a new world to explore. Facebook, and I'm going to stereotype just a little bit here because we have to, but you know, Facebook is kind of a closed garden within itself, and you have to make generally mutual connections. I know there is the subscription option now where you can subscribe to people that you're not friends with, but I still think that very few people outside of techie people are even aware that exists or use it much. So, you know, Facebook, you have to create these mutual relationships to establish that. On Twitter, as you just said it, you know, Twitter is a fantastic connection tool, and I'll give the compliment back as even as I've drawn Amy toward Google Plus, Amy's responsible for drawing me back into Twitter. Just seeing how Twitter was a place for the last year and a half where I just basically dumped links every day, and seeing how artfully Amy uses Twitter and how she can actually carry on interesting conversations in 140 characters intrigued me, and I wanted to grow up to be like her. So I've been experimenting more with it. And as I've engaged more, my Twitter following has been growing. Google Plus is a new land to explore. And what I say to people is, first of all, if you have that great community on Twitter, why would you want to move them somewhere else? Other than, I can understand, the ability to communicate beyond 140 characters. But still, the likelihood that you're going to move them en masse to a new place is very low. So one of the things that Google Plus has is it's Google, so it has pretty good search, certainly much better than what Twitter has been, and you know, far better than Facebook. I know Facebook is bringing this graph search. That's another podcast. I don't think it's a real search engine. But Google Plus has a pretty powerful search, and you can search and find where the conversations are happening. What I've been doing in a nutshell to answer your question is for myself and then for clients that get involved in Google Plus, is going out and finding the people, the pages in the community where people are talking about things related to what we're doing, and finding new people. Most of the people that I engage with regularly on Google Plus, I did not know on Facebook, I did not know on Twitter, I did not know on LinkedIn. So there's a lot more I can say about that, but the simple answer is it's a new territory to explore, and there are ways to find the people that will become your network there.
Mm. Interesting prospect. I like the concept of Google Plus prospecting.
Yes, that's the way I treat it. And you know, once I get people hooked into that, the other thing that I'll add to that is it's a place to bring new people that you meet through your other verticals. You know, I'm not trying to bring Facebook people over to Google Plus. I'm not trying to bring Twitter people over to Google Plus. I like what happens on each of those networks. I'm happy with that. But I am in my various business outlets promoting new people I come across through the content marketing that I do, through the speaking engagements into Google Plus and engaging them there. And many of them get hooked once they're there and see the level of conversations that you can have, the threaded, the long form comments, the ability to find other conversations that are going on, you know, the hangouts, et cetera, gets them hooked.
One of my challenges with Google is I think the circles are made backwards.
I agree.
Circles are, you know, you put people into circles, whereas one person has multiple facets, and they might be posting fishing pictures and, you know, technology pictures or technology mm-hmm. posts. And I only want to get the technology posts because I don't really care about fishing. And if they put them in a circle, then they can't be public. And so then that's all weird too, and I can't find them. So how do you manage your circles? I hate to turn this podcast. We try not to turn this podcast into like tactics 101. And how to use a tool, but how do you use your Google Circles?
That's a great question. That's changed radically for me. I had the same exact frustration. All of us, you know, who are kind of trying out Google Plus in the beginning, we think, oh, circles. I've got my SEO circle and my social media marketing circle and my techie circle and my New Orleans jazz circle, but that's something that I'm into, all these things. And then you get disappointed when you go to the circles because you said, like, darn those people, they're real people. They have children and cats and they're into the kayaking and the pictures of that, all kinds of things that I'm not into or that I wasn't looking for them from. And circles didn't really work well that way. Communities, I think, have gone a long way in solving that problem. So the very simplistic answer of it, now, topically, I do all my topical stuff almost exclusively in communities. And I find good communities in my topical areas of interest, or I build them if they don't exist. And then I've rearranged my circles, and pretty much my main circles are pared down to just 4 or 5 now. On Google+, just going not again to get too how-to here, but if you, in the main circle, you switch to a tab that shows a particular circle, you'll see a slider at the top. That slider lets you suggest, like, in my main view, I want to see nothing from this circle, I want to see a little, I want to see most posts, or I want to see all posts, and then there's the nuclear option all the way right, which is I want to be notified of these. So I have 4 circles, and I just kind of play with people, and I say, now I'm going to use my circles to think of people as people, not as topics. So I've pared down my circles to just the people who are interesting. You know, like Amy is incredibly interesting to me. Yes, I love her knowledge about marketing and about social media and different things that and engineering, things that she's involved in. But I'm just interested in her as a person. On Google+, you know, I would have her in my all post circle and maybe even in my notify circle, so I know everything that she's posted. So it's more kind of traffic management in my mainstream. I can't be there all day, so I want to see the most important, the most interesting people I want to see the most of. That's how I'm approaching it right now. Again, quickly, communities are for topical following. Circles are for interesting people. The more interesting they're in, they are, the more I turn up their volume.
Okay, I've been taking some notes here, and I'm noticing a trend that will lead us nicely into our next topic as well. Number one, I see that the circles in some ways preyed on at least mine, and I wonder if it had yours too, John, the old school web developer side, where I'm like, look, circles, I can put things in buckets,
yes.
Information architecture, right?
That's the way you start, yeah.
Yeah, and it's so interesting that I think all of us have said here that people is the new vector from which to start. Which actually brings us to our point, and you know, one of the things we want to talk about is the social media industry. And all three of us in some flavor have said tonight, we're walking away from social media and towards community. So Mark, you said it just now in terms of you move from circles into the concept of community. So less, you know, bucketizing perhaps on a content basis and more on a people basis, which again, communities of interest, they're so people gathered around a topic of interest. And John, I've been thinking a lot about this since we've done a couple podcasts ago, thinking about how, well, actually since the Metrics podcast, thinking about how we're moving much more, all of us, you, me, and Matt are all moving to a place of community with social media as the tools. And we all have social media tools in our arsenal, but we think a lot about the influencers, the people involved. So What do we think the state of the state is? If we've all had some contact with the social media industry, capital letters.
Well, just
who wants that softball?
Yeah. Well, Mark, just so you know where we're coming from or where I'm coming from, I don't even know how to talk about my career, but I certainly was never in marketing. I've been an entrepreneur and a scientist and a bunch of things, and I kind of stumbled into this job. And I've always been on the community side here at VMware, but I'm a technologist at heart. And so every time for my career, you know, you social media is very weird inside a corporation, right? Like, where the heck are we going to go? Like, there's never, probably shouldn't be a VP of social media. You know, the joke is that, right? That's the VP of PowerPoint. Like, you've got to do something. You've got to, you know, if you're going to do marketing, you've got to do field marketing or partner marketing or something marketing. So, you know, I have no idea where my career is going to go next, but you know, in trying to figure this out, I'm like, okay, well, I should become a social media person. And I keep trying to, over the years, I've tried to dip my toe into social media blogs and things, and I can really only handle it for a day or two before I start to upchuck. I just don't like them. Well, one of the problems is, right, you're right next door to multi-level marketing and get rich fast and internet marketing people, like who are dangerous and
yes.
Scammy. And then just even the marketing people, half of it's like motivational material and it feels like a self-help book, and then half of it's like 10 steps to a better Twitter account, you know, which are inherently dumb from the get-go. So I struggle with my relationship with the social media in the first place, and I feel like, just between, you know, the three of us, I feel like that's an old podcasting joke. I feel like that's hurt my, you know, my career from a footprint status. Like, you know, who the heck knows who I am? I'm just this dude that works at VMware. So I struggle with the social media, quote-unquote, industry and conferences and things like that. And I don't go to them, and I don't read the blogs, and I'm horribly out of touch. The danger with that is, right, is I'm very insular then. I don't pay attention to, you know, the conversation. You're a consultant. Now, Amy kind of teased it before we got online, saying that you actually were going to have a different title and changed your title. So and she said you had some opinion about the industry per se. But, I mean, what's your relationship with the rest of this industry we call social?
Well, to start off very provocatively, I happened to just today write a post that went viral on Google Plus, and it hit Google Plus has a "What's Hot" section. It's kind of like the trending section on Twitter, and you know hit the "What's Hot" page and getting a huge response. And my provocative title was, you know, "Why Verante?" That's my agency. "Why Verante killed its social media marketing department?" And a lot of people know me know that, you know, for all of 2012, my title was Director of Social Media Marketing at Verante. I did not lose my job, thankfully. But what I came to realize as it got late in 2012, first of all, I'd been kind of thrown into that title because Verante, as I said earlier, is an agency that grew up in the SEO world. But as they realized that was becoming more sophisticated, they kept hearing about this social media thing, and you know, darn, we got this guy, Mark, who seems to like it and understand it. And so, you know, be our social media guy. But I began to hate that as 2012 progressed, partly because I realized that when prospects were coming to us or were looking to expand our reach on existing clients, they said, "Oh, you need to talk to Mark. He's the social media guy." And I said, they'd instantly be, I know what they were thinking. And sometimes they would say it out loud. "Oh, he's going to get us more likes on Facebook. He's going to get us more retweets on Twitter, more Twitter followers." And I just began to loathe that for the same reasons that you were saying, John. And I realized what we do, you know, we geeky people, is we see something, we get enamored with a tool. You give us a new fancy hammer that has, I don't know, 3 claw hooks on the back of it instead of 2, and we obsess with that endlessly. We look at the tool, and it's just a tool. Social media is a tool. And I think that the maturation of online marketing has to be that, you know, stop being so obsessed with the tool and get back to being real marketers. There's a guy in our industry named Will Reynolds, who's just amazing. I've heard him speak at a number of conferences. He's very inspirational. And last year, big conference in the industry called MozCon. He gave a talk, and he invented a Twitter hashtag which survived to this day. Not many conference hashtags are still being actively used 8-9 months later. But it was RCS, and I don't know what the explicit rating on this on this podcast is, but I'll let you imagine the S. It's real company S. And he said, we need to, the SEO and social media industry needs to move on to be doing real company S. And by that, he meant acting like real marketers, professional marketers, being concerned about our brands and the overall impact that we're having. So tie up that story. After much deliberation, we renamed our department from social media marketing to digital outreach. And what we're about is we take on a client, and instead of saying, like, okay, how can we get you more Facebook likes? We're saying, what is your business about? What are your goals? Who are your existing audience? Who are you trying to reach? What are you trying to do? Understand that. And then saying, my role and my task and my team's task is to say, how do we create that influence, that authority online that's going to bring you to that next level of where you want to go? And the social media channels are one of many aspects of that. So that's where that ties in now, and why we no longer have a social media marketing department. Social media has become a hammer in our toolbox, not what we do.
Yeah, I like that. I used to have outreach in my title, too. I think I like that better. I think my current title has evangelist in it, but I think I like outreach better, actually.
Well, really, we came up with it. We did some research, and we found, first of all, digital outreach was a title that not many people were using, which means we get to invent it. So that was part of the motivation for
nice.
It.
Yeah.
And we're going to be producing a lot of content over the next year about, you know, what is that? What do we do and how do we do that? But it is more of that standpoint of, I know one of the buzzwords in the online marketing field for the last year or two has been inbound marketing.
Yeah.
And I like that. And I understand that, you know, outbound being the traditional kind of Mad Men, we'll put it out there on television and billboards and see what sticks. You know, the idea of inbound is attracting and drawing in a targeted audience. I think outreach is the next level of that, where it really becomes real people building relationships, finding out, you know, who are the people that can go to work for us out there, who will be our natural allies, and how do we partner with them? How do we get on their radar? How do we make content that's going to be attractive to them and show them that we love their content, and they get on our team and our side and start to spread our message and our brand and introduce us to people we never would have met otherwise.
I have to say, that has been, I got to send some props to John. I feel like in our industry, he has led the way there. And thus the giant atomic balls of SEO, because I wanted to say it too. You know, truly identify the people and talk about empowering them, empowering an army of volunteers who are doing this out of passion and belief and incredible knowledge. And it's a wonderful thing to watch the barriers removed and to see that happen. One term I've heard is affinity marketing, which I thought was really nice as well. Because I've struggled to say what I do. When I say social media, it puts you, and again, another conversation, a very interesting thread I would think for the three of us. When I say I do social media, people assume I'm 20 and in college. And isn't that cute that that's my first internship?
The girl that tweets. Isn't that nice?
I'm the girl that tweets. Isn't that sweet?
It's adorable.
Yeah.
No, I also like the word authority that you use, Mark, along with affinity. It's both authority, affinity. I don't love the word influencer, but the authority and affinity imply my relationship with somebody else, which I think a lot of this is what this is about.
Yeah. I mean, Google Plus has been just where it's happened for me. I could have happened on Twitter. It could have happened on LinkedIn. It could have happened a lot of places. It's just where it happened for me. And because it's happened for me, I just kind of know how to work it, and I can make it happen for other people. When I say, and I cringe almost at myself when I say work it, make it happen, because that, again, sounds like that old, you know, manipulation, the old affiliate marketing kind of thing. If you're not worthy of authority, I can't give it to you. But if you've got something, if you've got an idea, if you've got a passion, if you've got, you know, something that is driving you, something that other people need to hear, my job is just opening up the channels, making the connections, connecting with the right people, and let you do your thing. And the SEO and the, you know, the network kind of builds itself at that point. You just got to get the ball rolling. You got to make those connections. Can I share? This is the blog post. It's not mine. It's by another guy. It's my Desert Island blog post. Like, if I could share one blog post and only one on all my social networks for next year, it would be this one. And I think you're going to like it, John. It's a guy named AJ Cohn, who I met through Google Plus, become a real life friend for me now. Just a brilliant, brilliant marketer. And lately, without getting too geeky on this side of it, there's been this whole controversy over this thing called AuthorRank. It's a rumor. It's something that Google has been working on for years, an ability to evaluate authors on various topics. It's connected to Google authorship and rank them in search. AJ and I and a lot of other people who have been studying this very closely are very convinced that Google is still very far away from implementing anything like that. But a lot of people think, no, AuthorRank is on. You've got to be building AuthorRank. AJ wrote this post. Google it. You'll find it. Called Build Your Authority, Not Your AuthorRank. And I think you could substitute at the end of that post, build your authority, not your social media follower, not your influence, not your number of Twitter followers.
Out.
Not your clout. Build your authority. It is a wonderful post. And he talks about, if you are doing that, if you are creating the content that shows you know what you're talking about, if you are out there in the social networks helping people, answering their questions, demonstrating that you're worthy of being followed, engaged in, and interacted with, all the rest follows. It's not about a bunch of tricks.
Amen. It's, amen. Well, Mark, you're one of the good guys.
Hey, okay.
It's interesting. As I hear this conversation, I know we sort of took this on about what about the social media industry, again, SMI all in big capital letters. And it is so interesting to me. It's funny, we're referencing the web, old school web stuff over and over. Do you remember the days of the tricks when you're like, pretend to be somebody else and go click that 100 times, man? Or
absolutely.
You know, go into a bulletin board and pretend like you're somebody else and make a bad comment. I mean, it just, it feels like with any evolution, social media has matured to a point where some people are just getting on board and they're doing what I consider to be juvenile tricks like that, that the bottom will fall out of. They are inauthentic. They are not sustainable. They are not real marketing. And I love the concept that you're introducing here of, in some ways, this is a Wild West and you have to be a good marketer. You have to lay down the tricks and do what is sustainable. And that's the only way forward.
And you know something? This is, first of all, the reason that more people aren't doing it is because it is harder. And it's harder in the terms of you've got to, as I said earlier, you've got to really be an authority. You've got to know your stuff. You've got to be on top of your game. You've got to be reading. You've got to be studying. You've got to be listening. You've got to be engaged so that you have some authority that's worth following. And it takes time to build that up and get the momentum going on that. But it's so much more fun. Yeah, I would not ever want to go back to the old tricks because they're just tricks. Anybody can do them. You know, it's follow the formula. It's one of the simplest, you know, back in the early days of Twitter, you know, it's like follow everybody back that follows you. If you get a reputation that you're followed back, then you're going to get more followers. Well, so what? You know, what are all those fake followers worth to you at the end of the day?
And it sounds a little dirty.
It is. You know, you can sleep at it as you feel like, I love now going to real life conferences. I'm getting more and more opportunities. I'm getting invited to come speak and engage with people because I get real people coming up to me who want to meet me in real life. You know, because they have honest respect for me. Mm-hmm. Nobody comes up to meet somebody that says like, "Boy, you really pulled a great trick on me on Twitter." You know, you're never gonna get that. We're humans after all, and this matters to me, and I hope it matters to more and more business. I think the businesses that are really doing cool stuff and succeeding these days, it's mattering about being human and making those human connections. And it matters to me at the end of the day that there are people out there that like and respect me for what I bring into their lives, not just that I pulled off a marketing trick on them that got them to empty their wallets.
Yes, so please don't come and buy Facebook likes or ask people to do that. That's where this conversation started over lunch.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I hope people aren't still doing that. Legitimate people aren't still doing that. Hey, Mark, since we're on the topic of social media industry, let me ask you one question that's been my pet peeve of the week. So we just got through buying a bunch of very expensive social media software, and so I've been talking to a lot of social media vendors, and we have – consultants come in who wherever they came from, they're now various flavors of social media consultants. And the whole marketing side of the social media industry is really has a tendency to use this word brand. We help brands do X. We help brands, you know, whatever they do. And that, as a non-marketer, that especially over the last little bit has really started to put me off, because I work for a company, not a brand. And my company has a brand and expresses its brand through how it treats its customers, how it treats its partners, how it treats its prospects. And that's it, it's more show, not tell. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really, what is this fetish for brands? I think it's unhealthy. I think it speaks to the superficial and to the shiny.
Well, it could, and I've used it several times in this conversation. So you know, you've rightfully put me on the defensive.
In a friendly way, I hope.
No, totally. I take it that way, and I appreciate that because
I think it's just I think it's really just jargon. I think it's really just that that portion of the industry just uses that. But
it certainly can be. When I use it, what I mean, and I really appreciate your challenge on that because it gives me the opportunity to explain it because I have something different in my head. I use it as kind of a shorthand or substitute for person, because I come at it from, you know, where I've been able to find the most power in networking and authority and these things you're talking about is by real people. I mean, that's the easiest thing to do. It was far easier for me to build my personal authority, my personal brand, to use that word, online than it was to build Verantes. Because people are going to connect more easily with another person. They're going to trust a person far before they're going to trust a brand, a corporate logo, a faceless logo. I think brand does have value if you're thinking about it in terms of what is the overall impression that people have when they think of your company? How do they feel toward it? And these are things that we don't think about enough. As marketers, we can get so enamored with the metrics and the ROI and measuring this and that. But at the end of the day, people really connect with things on an emotional level. Last night at the SEO meetup where Amy spoke, Marty Smith from Atlantic BT, who was one of the other speakers, spent his whole time talking about storytelling. And he held up examples of brands like REI, companies like REI that have a story. And he said, you want to know if a company understands its story, go to their about page. And if you go to the about page of REI.com, there is a story there. There's a journey that they want to take you on. And then he showed us how, as you go through their content, as you go through even their product pages are tied into the story that they want to tell them, they want to bring you along on. So when I say brand, I'm just kind of using a container to contain all of that. And I think it has merit, it has importance. When it comes down to a lot of items that consumers buy or services they purchase, there's a certain level where they're all commodities. What makes that decision? Why do I buy from A and not from B? A lot of times that is a very emotional decision. It's a subconscious decision, and it can have a lot to do with how connected I feel to the story and the personhood of that company.
That works for me. I don't know.
Yeah, and I think your content is one way that you create that. You know, one of the things that we try to help companies do that we work with who haven't thought through this way before, they're not an REI who's done such a good job of that. John Coleman over there has become a friend. Is there? I forget, he has one of these really cool titles like me that I don't understand what it means, but basically what he does is, you know, he is in charge of the outward face of REI online. He's very little time that. But one of the things that we try to do is say, like, we're not even going to do any social media for you until we've talked with you enough to help you understand and be able to define and actually express what is your story, what are you about, you know, what's the journey you want to take your potential customers on, and then we can begin to build that into your content. I think that's what, you know, one of the things that builds authority online that we've been talking about.
Interesting. So, Mark, I want to go back actually to Google Plus a little bit, and we talked a little bit about niches and certain niches get started. It's ecosystems get started in various platforms. You know, the virtualization, you know, moss has all grown over in Twitter. You say you have a little bit of your foot in both camps. So you're just getting started in Twitter a little more than Google, or as opposed to Google Plus. But I'm kind of curious if you see differences in culture between the Twitter side and the Google Plus side. Or what particular niches are flourishing? I know, for instance, the photography niche, the photographers really are having more fun over on Google+. And then finally, we didn't even get to talk about Hangouts or anything like that. How important are Hangouts and real-time interaction part of the Google+ culture that maybe not so much over on the Twitter side?
Good. Let me share, rather than talk about that kind of in general, let me share two real-world examples. There are a number of other niches that we're seeing now begin to come in and stake a claim on Google Plus and do some exciting things. One of those that I personally witnessed up close is real estate. And that wasn't there 5-6 months ago. I won't give all the credit to this guy, but a lot of credit goes to a guy who's become a friend of mine online, Bill Gassett. Bill Gassett was a guy who came in, followed me, and a few other people saw, you know, Mark, you're doing some really interesting things on Google Plus. You're making some things happen here. And I look around, and again, it was, goes back to that thing of so many people come to Google Plus, look around and say, oh, my friends aren't here. My existing customers aren't here. Chuck it. I go away. Instead, Bill Gassett was a guy that said, cool, new wilderness, new territory. And he looked over the top of the mountain and said, pioneer land, I'm going to make it happen here. And he brought the real estate world in. He started creating things that were interesting for them, bridging over to hang, they started doing, you know, hangouts, they started building communities when that came in. He kind of showed the way. And now he's at the core of a very vibrant real estate marketing community on Google Plus. So that, you know, that can happen.
Part of that because of the added visual component of Google Plus?
In part, more just showing how real estate, most of his audience are real estate agents and or independent real estate realtors who are in very competitive markets. And it's so hard for them to get that bandwidth that I was talking about at the beginning. It's so crowded. Especially, you know, search is very important to them because that's where people go. You know, we're looking for houses in Raleigh, North Carolina. You know, if you search for something like that, it's a very, very crowded space. So what he's showing them in particular is how, you know, they can get a voice into search via Google Plus. Again, the how of that is more complicated than we get into this podcast. But for him, that's the hook. And you know, that's where he's bringing other real estate people in. And he's teaching them how to do it. And he's demonstrating, you know, how he's doing it for himself. So I think you said visual because you're thinking like pictures of houses and things like that. Not really seeing that yet. I'm sure the people that are doing that. And there's not people directly marketing to their customers on Google Plus in that real estate market so much as using it as a platform to get out there and influence where their customers are buying, which is in search.
One of the things I wanted to pull through that you had said in sort of an interesting high theme, it seems, of this show is we're trying to connect with people. We're talking about communities forming around us and the idea of going from social to community, from one platform to the other. But irrespective of platform, it sounds like be brave. Go meet people you don't know already. In this business that we are in, prospecting is so much of it. And I think we can all fall prey to love of our own PR, love of our own whatever. And the challenge is in this newly social world where each little positive hit is so affirming to be brave and go where it's uncomfortable.
What's funny, that's a great point, Amy, because what's kind of funny now is, you know, now that I've become kind of the Google Plus guy, is I've created these monsters under me. There's people who have kind of followed me and imitated what I've done and build little powerful networks on Google Plus who are so, you know, they've gotten so much out of it, they're kind of drunk on Google Plus. So they're thinking, you know, Google Plus is the be all day. You know, for a while, some of them would tend to just talk trash about Twitter or Facebook or other, you know, other platforms that are out there. Recently, because of my renewed involvement in Twitter, I've been able to lead some of them back onto Twitter or into Twitter for the first time and challenging them with that same kind of thing. The way you came into Google Plus, now go into Twitter. You know, go forth into the wilderness, son, my son, and see what you can do. And they're finding that kind of adventure. They're finding, you know, new conversations, new people they wouldn't have known otherwise. So that's a very good point.
So with that, shall we wrap up this episode of the Geek Whisperers?
Sounds like a wrap, Amy. Where all can you find the Geek Whisperers?
You can find us on Twitter at geek_whisperers, on facebook.com/geekwhisperers, our website, geek-whisperers. And you know what, John? Do we have a Google Plus site yet?
I don't know, Amy. You tell me. Do we?
I don't think we do. I think after this episode, you'll find a way to find us on Google Plus.
Plus, think of the opportunities you're missing.
Yeah, we'll have to do it. But I mean, you know, there's only so much time in the world, right? Only so much time in the day. That's one of the challenges, right? Corporately, we have a footprint over there, but you know, do you really, if you're going to be someplace, right?
Sure. Yeah, and that's very true.
Be present.
I would endorse that more than
All right.
So until next time, you'll find us anywhere you can find podcasts to listen to.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks, John.
Thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it.
I have giant, big, atomic balls of SEO.